May it please the court, my name is Stephen Arvin, registration number 39020, representing Ms. Kathy Yauch. Today I plan on focusing my arguments on the second issue raised in Mrs. Yauch's briefs concerning the suppression or the trial court's failure to suppress the turquoise shirt. I do not plan on addressing the first issue concerning equal protection. However, if this court has any questions concerning that issue, I'll be happy to answer those questions.
Mr. Arvin, let me just ask one question. I wasn't clear from your briefs. Are you asserting both an as-applied and a facial challenge, or one or the other?
An as-applied challenge, Your Honor. Because the seizure of the shirt from Ms. Yauch's home was not authorized by the search warrant, the prosecution bore the burden of establishing that the seizure was justified by an exception to the Fourth Amendment's warrant requirement. However, the prosecution did not establish the plain view exception or any other exception to the Fourth Amendment requirement to justify the seizure, nor is the seizure justified by the fellow officer. The only evidence that the prosecution produced concerning the seizure of the shirt was the following, which was elicited through the testimony of Investigator Ryan Ball. Mrs. Yauch's house was searched pursuant to a warrant, as this court is probably aware. The trial court later determined that the warrant did not properly authorize the search for or seizure of the turquoise shirt. Investigator Ball testified that he had the responsibility of directing other sheriff's deputies and investigators with regard to the search, and Ball was present when the house was searched. Ball testified that all the deputies were aware of the items they were searching for that were listed in the affidavit. Ball testified that when he was in another room of the house, a deputy named Deputy Bliss found the turquoise shirt in a bedroom and called Ball's attention to it. Ball testified that he walked into the bedroom where Bliss was holding up the shirt in her hands. Ball testified that he took a look at it and, quote, said, "That looks like the turquoise V-neck ruffle shirt to me." Ball did not testify about where in the room that Deputy Bliss had found the shirt. And when the trial judge asked Ball if it was seized off the floor or out of a dirty clothes hamper, Ball said that he did not recall. This is all the information the prosecution elicited to support its claim that the shirt was found in plain view.
Mr. Arvin, let me just stop you right there, because based on the items, the size of the items they were searching for, which were admittedly reasonably small, is your contention that Officer Bliss couldn't have looked wherever she looked in the middle bedroom?
My contention is not that Officer Bliss couldn't have looked there. My contention is that the prosecution hasn't established that Officer Bliss, and adequately established that Officer Bliss did look there. As the trial court noted, it is possible that these smaller items, such as checks and that sort of thing, had been already seized and booked by the time Officer Bliss found the turquoise shirt. And regardless of the circumstances, there's simply nothing in the record to establish what Officer Bliss was looking for when she discovered the turquoise shirt.
Can we assume that because they were listed in the warrant, for example, the wallets and smaller items were part of the search that she was conducting?
I think that is a fair assumption to make. I think the court could assume that Officer Bliss was looking for those items, or at least that the police involved in the search were looking for those items. So I guess I'm actually going to step back a little bit from that statement, Your Honor. I think it's fair to assume that the police in general looking for those items, whether Officer Bliss was, that's something that I think the prosecution had to establish, and I don't think that they did that through Investigator Ball's testimony.
But Mr. Arvin, you're not contending the way I read your argument, you're not contending that the affidavit with respect to those other items other than the shirt was insufficient and didn't establish probable cause.
No, I'm not, Your Honor. No, but my contention is that as the trial court found, the affidavit for the search warrant did not establish probable cause to seize or search for the turquoise shirt. Thus, in order for the turquoise shirt to be legally seized, it had to be seized under some exception to the warrant requirement. The only possible exception that could come into play here would be the plain view exception. However, because the item was not seized pursuant to the warrant, just that the prosecution bore the burden of establishing that the plain view requirement was satisfied, and they did not meet that burden.
I mean, it ordinarily wouldn't be contraband, obviously, that would be immediately obvious to the policeman finding it. Does it matter whether the searching officer knew what was in the warrant or not, even if the warrant itself was defective?
I think it does in this circumstance, Your Honor. Now, this court has raised the issue of the possible issue of the fellow officer rule and its possible application in this case. And there could be a circumstance in which, theoretically, even if the officer searching for the item was not aware of the incriminating nature of the item that he or she was searching for, because another officer had was aware of information to support probable cause to search and seize that item and had directed that officer to search and seize the item, that officer, actually executed a seizure, would be permitted under our case law to seize the item despite the fact that he or she was not aware of the incriminating value of the item. However, here, it's the prosecution did not establish that this officer who seized the item, W. Bliss, was acting at the direction of Investigator Ball. Now, Investigator Ball did have information that he did not include in the warrant that could arguably support probable cause to seize the item. However, the prosecution did not establish that Deputy Bliss is acting at Investigator Ball's direction. The only testimony that Investigator Ball gave on that matter was something to the effect that the deputies who were searching the house were aware of the items in the warrant, which indicates that Deputy Bliss seized the item pursuant to the warrant other than Investigator Ball himself.
Well, Ball was present at the investigation, was he not?
That's true, Your Honor.
And wasn't he the person in charge of that investigation?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So why isn't it reasonable to assume that Bliss knew he was in charge and acting in his direction?
I think it is reasonable to assume that Bliss knew that he was in charge. However, Investigator Ball did not establish through his testimony at the hearing that he had told that he was to seize or search for the turquoise shirt or any other item in the warrant. I think it's also an equally fair assumption to make that Deputy Bliss had simply read the warrant and was acting at the direction of the warrant rather than Investigator Ball himself when she seized that item, the turquoise shirt.
Are you advocating a rule that says the person in charge of the investigation has to read the warrant to all of the other assistant investigators?
Well, I'm not advocating a rule for that, Your Honor. I think if the warrant itself had authorized the seizure of the shirt, if there was sufficient information in the affidavit to support probable cause for seizure of the shirt, then I think that Deputy Bliss would be within her rights to seize the shirt, and it would not have been any sort of requirement that the directing officer specifically read the warrant to her. However, here we're in a situation where the warrant itself does not adequately authorize seizure of the shirt. We're looking at the law in a different context, and I think in order to rely on the fellow officer rule, which does require, in order to be applied, that the seizing officer is acting at the direction or command of another officer, then in that circumstance, it is required that the officer or some officer of probable cause directs the seizing officer to search for and seize the shirt.
But Mr. Arvin, I thought Investigator Ball did testify that he was directing the search. Isn't that in the record?
That is correct, Your Honor.
So I'm afraid I don't understand then your application. If he testified that he's directing the search and he arguably himself had probable cause, why then doesn't Officer Bliss have probable cause to seize the shirt?
Because it was unestablished that the shirt was in plain view. As I discussed in my briefs, even if the investigator Paul himself had seize the shirt, it would not be admissible unless it was either authorized by the warrant, properly authorized by the warrant, in other words, if there's probable cause within the warrant to seize the shirt, or if one of the exceptions to the warrant requirement were met, which in this case, the only possible exception is the plain view exception. Even if Investigator Ball himself had seized a shirt, if he had moved beyond the scope of the warrant and searched and rummaged through items in Mrs. Yauch's house that were not within the scope of the warrant to find the shirt, then it would not be admissible because it would not be a plain view. And here it was not established that Deputy Bliss actually found an item within plain view. The prosecution bore the burden of establishing that the police did not move beyond the scope of the warrant and found the item within plain view. They did not do so. Does the court have any further questions?
Thank you.
I reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, and may it please the court, John Lee on behalf of the people, bar number 38141. The exclusionary rule is a judicially designed remedy designed to safeguard the Fourth Amendment protections through its deterrence effect rather than to vindicate an individual person's and aggrieved party's rights. Under that view, it applies only in narrow circumstances, only when it will serve as a deterrent purpose, and only when that deterrent purpose is greater than any cost associated with the exclusion of otherwise admissible probative evidence. Under that rule, announced by the U.S. Supreme Court in Leon and reaffirmed by our Supreme Court in Attlee, four considerations independently control this case. One, the warrant did provide probable cause to seize the shares. Two, the good faith exception applies. Three, the evidence is admissible under the plain view of the officer rule. And four, even assuming that the evidence should not have come in, any error was harmless considering the overwhelming evidence establishing the defendant's guilt. Beginning with the first, the evidence was admissible because the warrant did in fact provide probable cause to seize it. When reviewing warrants, the magistrate's task is to, using practical and common sense, to look at the warrant to determine whether or not it provides probable cause that the item to be seized is evidence of a crime. Applying the common sense here, there's ample evidence in the warrant to establish probable cause to seize the shirt. The warrant provided that the crime occurred over a short period of time. It detailed that witnesses viewed the defendant commit the crime over a short period and said when and where. It listed, I think there's no dispute, that it listed sufficient details outlining that to believe that a crime had been committed and that the defendant was the one that committed the crime. Considering all that evidence, I think it's a common sense conclusion to determine that of all the items listed, the only clothing item could reasonably be construed to be what one of the witnesses said the defendant was wearing when they viewed her commit the crimes.
Mr. Lee, if we take that premise, what would prohibit a police officer from establishing probable cause for five items and then tacking on 10 additional items where there's no probable cause? Where's the end point?
Well, and I think that's a good example. So I think we'd have a much more difficult problem here if it said, like, 50 pairs of jeans. It's hard to link that back to what was said in the affidavit. But in this case, when we have sufficient evidence saying, we're pretty much the basis of it was that people saw the defendant commit the crime, and then there's one clothing item listed. I think it's a fair and reasonable, and I think it's probably the most reasonable inference to believe that that's what one of the witnesses identified the defendant wearing. And again, when you have multiple items of, again, like 50 jeans, I think it's much harder to make that connection, and I don't think that would be the common sense conclusion. But in this case, I think it is. So based on that, I don't know if this court even needs to get to the other exceptions outlined in the brief, because I think the trial court was incorrect in finding that the warrant did not set forth probable cause to seize the shirt. But even if we say that it didn't, the good faith exception would apply. I think I heard defense counsel, he said in the reply brief, and I think I heard him issue today, that there was evidence that Bliss was relying on the warrant when she found the shirt. And I think under that alone satisfies the good faith exception. To prove the good faith exception, we should have to show that the officer was acting under warrants and that it wasn't so bare bones that a reasonable officer would not have believed that the warrant was valid. In this case, there was sufficient evidence presented from Investigator Ball establishing that he was supervising and directing Bliss to find the shirt. And I think, as defense counsel acknowledged, evidence did provide that she was relying on the warrants. I think if we look at the warrant, it's not at all tantamount to a bare-bones warrant. It provided ample details outlining the defendant's involvement in the crime and that a crime had been committed. So certainly a reasonable officer acting under the warrant, as the officer was in this case, could use the good faith exception to seize the shirt as she did. And again, with those two, each of those independently resolve the issue before the court. But even assuming we get to the fellow officer in plain view rule, as I think this court's questions reveal, the evidence does establish the fellow officer rule in this case. In order to apply, the evidence must show that the officer was acting at the direction of another officer or in communication, and that the police as a whole had probable cause. At the outset, I think the defense counsel mentioned in his reply brief that no Colorado case has ever applied it to the seizure. It's always been an arrest, and I think that's correct. But when we look at the purpose of the rule, there's just no basis for carving out an exception for the seizure of an item as opposed to arrest. As the Supreme Court explained in Arias, the whole point of the federal officer rule is so that the police can operate and work as a team. That applies just as much in the seizure of an item as it would as an arrest. So it's certainly the people's view that it would apply to the seizure of an item. And in this case, the evidence amply supports the application of that rule to this case. On page 18 of the December 14 transcripts, the officer expressly stated that he was the lead investigator and he was directing the other deputies. So clearly, the evidence did show that she was acting in the direction of another officer. And at the same hearing, the evidence did provide the probable cause to believe that the shirt was evidence of a crime because the Sprint store employee had identified that that's what the perpetrator was wearing.
Mr. Lee, what about Mr. Arvin's contention that the people didn't put on any evidence about where the shirt was found other than it was found in a middle bedroom and Officer Bliss didn't testify?
Okay, one on Officer, well, the location, I think, is irrelevant in this case. As the trial court found, because the search warrant listed small items, such as receipts and credit cards, certainly the officers have a right to be anywhere those items could be found. And that certainly would include a shirt, which is much larger than.
But the argument is that there's no evidence about that either, as to what Bliss was looking for, or whether the other items had already been found before the shirt was found.
Okay, well, let me answer that a couple of ways. First, I think the only inference we really gather from the record is that it was a single search. On page 18 of the record, she says that the search happened once. It wasn't one of those searches where the police left, came back another day. It was all during one search. And I was getting to the point of putting in context of what exactly was argued below. So what the defense argued was that there wasn't probable cause for the seizure of the shirt. They never argued that there wasn't probable cause because it was outside the scope of an otherwise lawful search. We don't even get the mention of the plain view burden from the defense until after the people presented their evidence on the December 14th hearing. So what I think under the existing record, I think the fair inference is that it was found during the search. There's no evidence to the contrary. That the police did one single search, they were looking for all the items, and during that search, that's when it's found. To the extent that this court finds that that's not enough, I don't necessarily know if the issue is before the court because it wasn't really raised below until after the people had presented their evidence. And just as a practical matter, I don't think you can impugn an otherwise correct Fourth Amendment finding based on a hypothetical that there could have been another factor present that would have vitiated that theory. Because I think we're really dealing with this two different theories. It was argued as there's no probable cause, and then now it's presented as, and it might have been outside, even if there was probable cause, it could have been outside the scope of the search because it wasn't found before the other items were found. And I think the problem with that, and I guess my hypothetical to that is, if you think about a third-party standing case where the people present evidence that the defendant's wife gave consent to search the house, we then prove it, then the argument defense counsel argues, well, that's true, but it's possible the defendant could have been home, he could have withdrawn his consent. Again, that's conjectural, and that shouldn't initiate the otherwise valid probable cause finding or exception requirement. And I think that's kind of the candle we have in this case. Even assuming that the evidence should not have been admitted, certainly our position that any error was harmless considering the overwhelming evidence establishing the defendant's guilt. It wasn't so much the identification evidence of the shirt that was hurtful to the defense case, it was really the context in which it all happened. So here we have the defendant's truck bashing from the very beginning, the truck that took the backpack. We then have someone firmly identifying the defendant in the restaurant, and then her leaving. At that point, the phone call is made. And then what was really hurtful about the Sprint store employee's testimony was what the person on the phone said, which was, I can't believe it went through. We then have the defendant going back into the store being positively identified. So I think when we put it, the importance of the evidence wasn't so much that the Sprint store employee recognized the ruffled V-neck shirt, but it's just the context in which all these events happened. And that would have happened regardless of whether or not the evidence was suppressed. And I think the most important piece of evidence in this case was the hard drive that was found in the renter's apartment, where the people presented evidence that the defendant admitted to her renters that she hid the hard drive from a computer under the floorboards of the police station house. So I think when we take all that evidence, certainly any error in the evidence was harmless. And if the court has no further questions, I should affirm the judgment of the court. Thank you.
Thank you.
Considering whether this defense's argument is properly before this court, the prosecution bore the burden of establishing that the item was found in plain view. The prosecution rested on the plain view exception in the trial court. Clearly, the issue was before the trial judge, and it was discussed thoroughly between the prosecutor and the trial judge. Further, defense counsel did argue to the trial judge that there's nothing in the warrant that gave Deputy Bliss probable cause to seize a turquoise shirt. I think the argument the defense has raised on appeal is properly before this court. It is worth noting, though, that the issues, many of the arguments that the Attorney General has raised were not raised before the court. The good faith exception, that was not raised before the trial court, and for that reason, I'd argue is not properly before this court. The fellow officer rule was not raised by the prosecution below either. It is also worth pointing out that in his argument before the trial court, the prosecutor conceded for the purposes of argument that the affidavit was insufficient and that it had not established probable cause to seize the turquoise shirt. Concerning the argument regarding good faith, this was clearly a bare bones affidavit in respect to the turquoise shirt. As I stated, the affidavit contained absolutely no mention of the shirt in the body of the affidavit. It is only in the list of items to be seized that the shirt was mentioned. An affidavit, a bare bones affidavit, has been described as a wholly conclusory document, and I think it doesn't get more conclusory than this when there is absolutely no description of the item to be seized in the body of the document itself, but is merely listed as an item to be seized. And for similar reasons, I would argue that there really is no, the argument that probable cause was found in the affidavit for the seizure of the shirt, there's really nothing to that argument. The shirt, again, was not mentioned at all in the body of the affidavit. I don't think it's necessarily a reasonable conclusion to believe that the fact that it was simply listed, from that one could draw a reasonable implication that the shirt was being worn by the defendant during the commission of the alleged crime. I think one could draw a multitude of conclusions from its presence in the list of items to be seized. One could determine that it was clerical error, that it was a reference from another case. There are multiple of inferences that could be drawn, and it does not meet the probable cause standard. Does this court have any other questions?
No.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you, counsel, for your argument on this case this afternoon. The case will stand submitted. We'll issue you a written opinion in due course.